Normal's former city manager has retired but is still speaking out, and he has a warning. Mark Peterson wrote an article for a professional journal that was rejected as too strongly worded. He rewrote it, but eventually just pulled it. Over 30 years with the town, Peterson says he's seen a decline in compromise by elected officials at the state and federal level and weaker partnerships with state and federal governments. He says that's affecting local governments and residents. He says there's less ability for local government to meet citizen expectations for service.
And that's due to, I think, some fundamental changes in the funding model, the traditional funding model used by government. That model just doesn't work like it did 15 or 20 years ago. And government is always slow to react and slow to change. And therefore, you read it everywhere. I don't know of any local government anywhere in the country that isn't having budget problems, and some more than others. But part of that is the model in which most of us subscribe to. Most, when I say us, I'm talking about local governments, to provide basic services to the
sales taxes.
Well, that's part of it, but it's other taxes as well that have been eroded in some cases by actions of the state or federal government, in some cases by just changes in behavior and changes in technology. For example, many cities collect a significant amount of money from telephone usage. That applies to landlines. It doesn't apply to cell phones. Huh. And obviously, landlines are declining, you know, exponentially every year, and that has affected the revenue source. And in Illinois, the state legislature made some fundamental changes to how local governments tax electricity, which we always have had a franchise tax and electricity tax, and now consequently that revenue source brings in far less revenue than it used to. And then the big one is sales tax. That's the big one.
You wrote in an unpublished article that the two-party system is failing, and that's likely to have a catastrophic consequence on the lives of residents who choose to live in a city or a town. We'll get to that, but first let's talk about the article. Why write it? How did that come about? And why is it unpublished?
Yeah, I was asked for one of the professional associations of which I am still a member and have been for years. They asked me to put together some thoughts on the state of government and the fact that I've been a player in government for 35 years and have had kind of a unique opportunity to watch it and study it and see what changes are occurring. And we're at a point right now in government, and I'm talking primarily at the state and federal level, although to some degree at the local level, where we're seeing some fundamental changes in how government operates. And they are kind of, in my mind, uncharted waters and disturbing. And so they asked me to put some thoughts together, which I did. They've not published the piece yet, and I'm not sure if they will. I think in part because it was pretty direct, and I think there's some concern that some constituents of that organization might find it to be offensive a little bit. It wasn't intended to be. It was more intended to just be my observations about what's happening in this country.
Well, we appreciate you taking the time to talk to us about some of the things that are on your mind. They did, of course, ask you to break a few dishes on your way out the door.
Yes.
But they decided there were just maybe you broke the stove and the refrigerator too. I don't know.
I guess because they did say don't hold back. Yeah. But when I didn't, I think they got a little uncomfortable. But so, that's okay.
So can you cite some examples of this failure of the two-party system on the national and state level? Are you talking about gridlock, the ability to get anything done? Maybe we can talk about pensions at the state level, all those things?
Yeah, you've hit, it's gridlock. It's the inability to address complex problems that are desperate for a solution. A pension's a great one here in our own state of Illinois. There is no debate that the lack of funding or lack of funding of our public pension systems is a huge problem, and it's growing every day, and we need to solve it. We need to fix the problem, yet there is complete paralysis in our state legislature. They're not even talking about it right now. Right. It's not even discussed because there are other probably maybe less critical problems that they can't even come to grips with, let alone trying to solve the problems associated with public pensions. So that's an example. And I say two-party, but it really goes beyond party. It's almost ideology. And it's what I see, this extremism that is occurring, particularly at the state and federal level when you talk about the legislatures, but also I think we're beginning to see a little bit of it sometimes at the local level as well. But this extremism where somebody has bought into a certain ideological perspective and they are completely unwilling to compromise. And that's the foundation of the legislative process, is compromise. That without compromise, it cannot work. And there are members of Congress, members probably of the Illinois General Assembly, who said, I will not compromise, and frankly are proud of it. And they, when they run for re-election, they talk about how I didn't sell out, I didn't compromise. They would rather shut government down than compromise. And that's disastrous, potentially, because when you look at things like immigration reform and, you know, we just went through this tax reform issue, which was basically, you know, a single party driven initiative, healthcare reform.
Infrastructure, which we'll get to in a moment.
Huge.
So it's not rocket science, is it? The solution in Springfield, details aside, it's pretty simple to solve the budget problem, isn't it? I mean, on the surface, right? It's going to take. You tell me, what would it
take?
Well,
I wouldn't say it's simple.
I mean, it's painful.
It's painful, and it's complex, and it's going to require, you know, people working hard to come up with solutions, but it is solvable.
But it's solvable. It's revenue, it's cuts.
Yes.
It's both.
It's both.
Over a long period of time.
Yes, it's both over a long period of time.
And that's what I meant by simple.
Because we have ignored the problem for so long, that is why it is going to be painful, but it is straightforward. These are, as you said, it's not nuclear physics or rocket science. It's inflow and outflow. And so you've got to, in the case of the state of Illinois, we've got to reduce expenses. In some cases, I've said that means good programs are going to have to go, even though they're good, valuable programs and so forth. And then we've got to figure out a way to raise revenue. And then we have to have the discipline to stay the course for maybe a decade or so. And then maybe, just maybe, we'll be back to a situation where we're financially healthy.
So how are the failures in Springfield and in Washington, D.C., maybe the failure to compromise, making our lives and the jobs of local government officials, as you write, dramatically more difficult?
Well, first of all, we're beginning to see in Springfield that the General Assembly is forcing the hard decisions down to the local level. School districts, you take responsibility for the pensions. Mm. Oh, wow, great. And by withholding, we're going to keep revenue that we've given to you and we've promised to you, but we've changed our mind. We're going to keep it because we need it. That forces local governments to make those hard decisions. Are we going to cut expenses? Are we going to raise revenue? And frankly, most local governments have been pretty responsible. They balance their budgets. They don't have the ability to go in with an unbalanced budget. They can't print money. So they have to balance their budgets every year. But what we're seeing out of the state government is, hey, we have not been able to effectively do our job, so we're gonna force the tough decisions on you. And what's really annoying, I guess, and bizarre is they're actually now talking about limiting the ability of local governments to raise money, particularly school districts, through property tax limitations. And it's like, wow.
So then what?
Then what? That now we've taken, you know, a big part of our arsenal away, and so then it forces local governments to do things on the expense side because there's limits on the revenue side, particularly school districts that have very limited ability to raise revenue beyond property taxes.
In fact, wasn't there an instance just that affected the last town of Normal budget that the state decided it was going to keep part of the redistribution of tax funds and with very little notice?
No note. In fact,
it just left $1 million hole in the town of Normal budget, didn't it?
It was a little less than that, but it was something that was in the compromise budget that we didn't find out about until the budget was passed, and I don't think many people even knew it was in there. And those things can happen, but fundamentally, and again, I think with the state of Illinois, everybody's going to have to be part of the solution. And local governments are going to feel pain, as are school districts and counties and municipalities. And clearly the state is going to have to make some hard decisions. And we can say, you know, cite similar examples at the federal level as well. But I'm seeing that it's harder and harder for legislatures to come together to enact what I would consider to be reasonable and effective solutions to complex problems, because they are not willing to compromise. And that's both D's and R's, right and left, depending. It's both sides. I'm not casting stones at any particular party. We're all guilty of it. And ultimately, Mike, it's the voters. It's those of us who put people and vote. We need to demand it. And if that's not being done, then we need to put more people in there that will do that. Now, let me say this. I believe that there is a large number of I believe that most of our legislators are good people and they're well-intentioned. And I believe that most of them, or many of them, want to compromise. And they just feel that in this environment where there's so much money being spent by people who represent extreme viewpoints, that they're fearful that they'll be voted out of office by even if they're, let's use an example as a Republican who is interested in compromising, his own party, people within his own party will not tolerate that, or her own party, and they will mount some sort of a campaign. They don't care if they're Republican. They're not voting the way I vote. You could say the same thing about Democrats, and that's frightening. So I think there are a number of very good legislators who truly want to work collaboratively across the aisle, and they just don't feel like they can.
That's former Town of Normal City Manager Mark Peterson. He retired after a career in municipal government, 30 years of that with the town. As the federal government fails to deal with important issues such as immigration or health care or infrastructure, how are local governments reacting? And let's take infrastructure. So important, so expensive.
Yeah.
How many years has the federal government been kicking the can down the road regarding the gas tax, which funds infrastructure like roads and bridges along with transit, and has that had an effect on local government?
No question. Local and state governments. The federal government has for for decades been a major partner with local governments in infrastructure funding. And part of it is the gas tax, but there's a number of other sources that they've used to help undertake significant local and regional infrastructure projects. We're talking about roads and bridges, even in some cases buildings and underground utilities, things like that. Well, slowly but surely, the amount of funding available from federal sources for those kinds of things has dwindled, and now we're hearing, I mean, things coming out of Washington that are just almost unbelievable. I think the Trump administration has been talking about reversing the match. Traditionally, when a project becomes federally eligible, the federal government picks up the largest share of that cost.
So as much as an 80-20 split.
80-20 is typical. Sometimes it's 70-30. Sometimes it's 60-40. But 80-20 is traditional. Now the administration and the U.S. Department of Transportation is talking about maybe we need to reverse that, and the federal government will pick up 20% and let the locals pick up 80%. That seems like a more equitable share. Well, that's fine, but it means these projects won't happen, because there's no way local governments can foot 80% of the cost, so they won't happen.
I don't want to sound like a New Deal Democrat here, but are we missing out in terms of an economic boost with addressing our infrastructure needs?
Oh, absolutely. Infrastructure. And the interesting thing about infrastructure—
We'd be putting people back to work.
Absolutely. The interesting thing about infrastructure is it is probably one of the few— issue or one of the few spending categories that has bipartisan support. Republicans, Democrats, liberals, conservatives, they all like infrastructure, because for one thing, it does put people back to work. It drives our economic engine. It's good for economic development. Infrastructure is a good thing, and nobody debates infrastructure. And despite the fact that infrastructure funding is universally popular, And I'm even talking – people that are generally anti-government and anti-tax –
President Trump has even signaled that he's in favor of looking at the gas tax, an increase.
Exactly. They're okay with – as long as it's going to roads and, you know, curbs and gutters and bridges, we're okay with that. Despite that, the federal government has been unable to come up with a sustainable funding source and a plan for infrastructure across the country. And so, that's boggling to me.
So local governments in Illinois, in the absence of robust IDOT funding and federal transportation funding, are left to do more on their own, but they can't because their projects are too expensive.
Right.
We're not talking about repaving. We're talking about replacing bridges and things like that.
Correct. Correct. We've probably done more in Normal than most communities, but you're right. They budgets are already stretched. They can't do it. So, and the fact is, I mentioned this to somebody the other day. Most of you are probably too young to remember the old Fram oil filter commercial. You can pay me now or you can pay me later.
Sure.
Well, some of these infrastructure improvements can be undertaken when they're early enough at a reasonable cost. But if you wait 10, 12, 15 years, the cost is 3, 4, 5 times that because the item, whether it's a bridge or a road, has so badly deteriorated that it needs to be completely removed and replaced. So by biting the bullet and getting some of these repairs done maybe sooner than later, you're going to save a lot of money.
This is Sound Ideas. I'm Mike McCurdy. Retired Town of Normal City Manager Mark Peterson is in the studio, and we're talking about how state and federal governments and politics are having a negative impact on local municipalities. Compromise seems to be alive and well in Bloomington Normal among the two councils. Why do you think local elected officials can seem to work together more effectively than those on the state or national level?
Well, that's a great question, and I guess I would suggest that because the buck stops right here locally, and they have to, they're the ones who are ultimately directly accountable, and they have to figure out a way to get it done. They have to solve problems. So they don't have a choice. Now, I hear from colleagues throughout the country that they're seeing this, I will call this extremism that's happening in the state and federal, beginning slowly infiltrate local governments. And I hear of situations where you do have gridlock at the local level as well, because people of diverse ideological perspectives, and these may be nonpartisan situations, there's no party involved, but they just have an inability to work together to compromise and collaborate. But fortunately, in central Illinois, particularly Bloomington Normal, that has not been the case, and I think there's reason to be optimistic that that's going to continue here. Well, I think both our city councils, they have their differences, of course, but they generally, at the end of the day, try to work together to solve serious problems.
Play that out for me a little bit, if you would. How much can staff get done with a council that is mired in politics and obstructionism and maybe petty personality disagreements? Can staff maneuver around like the state and federal government? The state and federal governments, no matter how bad politics gets, the bureaucracy seems to still get most of the job done.
They do.
Well, what about on the local level?
Well, it makes it harder. I'm no longer part of that group, but those that are staff members spend a lot more time working on strategy and maneuvering things through this minefield, this political minefield. That takes a tremendous amount of time and energy that you can't spend on other things that are more productive. So yes, staff, I think, can help, and they can still get some things done. And I think you make a good point that at the state and federal level, there are some really good dedicated people at the staff level that are in these agencies that are running programs that are, despite some of the frustrations I'm sure they feel regarding the legislative branch, they're still committed to getting things done. And I will tell you this, I have had the opportunity to interact with we'll call them bureaucrats.
Which has a negative. I use the word bureaucracy. It has a negative connotation. It doesn't necessarily have to.
It does, and it's unfortunate because I've worked with people at the federal level in these agencies, and I'm telling you, these are extremely dedicated, committed, hardworking, very bright people who want to do good things. They are the antithesis of the stereotype of a bureaucrat. They are hardworking, they are committed, and they continue to work very hard to help whether it's local governments or the people that they serve. And I think staff can play a role, but it makes it so much more difficult, and you burn a lot of staff time just navigating these troubled political waters that could be more productively used on other things.
We've not talked much about the president. By most accounts, he's not leading well. There's a lot of reaction there, not a lot of leading. Do you think a backlash to the occupant in the White House could help sweep out what you call extremist legislators? Could change be on the horizon?
Well, there's two ways. That's possible, but I also see a lot of good people that are getting out. I see on both sides of the aisle people who I think are fundamentally good legislators.
U.S. Senator Jeff Flake on the Republican side.
Great.
Said, I'm
yes.
out.
Yeah, he's one example
Bob
of many.
Bob Corker, another
Bob
senator.
Both Flake and Corker are very conservative, but good legislators. I mean, good people. They understand what needs to be done, and they're like, I'm done. I'm out. And I think the president probably has hastened their departure. And I think there's things probably happening. I know there's on the other side as well. I'm done. I can't do this anymore. My guess is if you put this question to Senator Durbin, who has been in the U.S. Senate Congress for many, many years, I think he will tell you the same thing. It grinds you down. It's frustrating when you're there to do good work and you can't sit down with colleagues across the aisle and have meaningful conversations that could result in solutions. And it's not just the president, but you know, certainly right now it's a fascinating period in our history with what's going on in the White House.
In your article that is still unpublished, you write that you fear some sort of crisis could precipitate change.
Yes.
What sort of crisis? And I guess we should explore what kind of decisions actually take place during a crisis. Not very good ones.
Well, let's talk about the state of Illinois. I mean, at some point, there will be a funding crisis. This pension issue is enormous. It is huge. And we're not even talking about it right now in Springfield. We're ignoring it. We're focusing on other things that are not unimportant. But, I mean, this pension thing is going to break our financial future. And at some point, something's got to happen where whether it's external forces come to bear, whether it's bond markets, whether it's, I don't know what, they come in and force change. And you're right, at that point, options are very limited. And you don't have the ability to sit back and think about things and work together to try to come up with something. They're going to happen quickly, and they're going to happen forcefully, and they're going to be brutal.
Mark Peterson, congratulations on your retirement from the town of Normal, and thanks for your public service.
Thank you, Mike.
Peterson says there is a ray of hope. He says Illinois does have some creative and committed lawmakers at both the state and federal levels. Peterson, who retired as the town of Normal city manager at the end of March, says one positive of state and federal government dysfunction is local government will be more hesitant to take on projects that could be considered sprawl. He says roads and distant subdivisions cost communities. He also said future community comprehensive plans should plan for less robust state and federal partnerships. You're listening to Sound Ideas on GLT.